Water management. The impact of water-related contamination on health in any setting is far-reaching, and consideration of water issues is an essential component of all infection control efforts. However, since water is delivered by a community public water supplier, the responsibility for water management is shared by the healthcare facility and an outside entity. Once water enters the facility's distribution infrastructure, it is the responsibility of the facility. However, both entities must play a role in infection prevention. There are a handful of basic terms that may be encountered in healthcare settings. Black water is wastewater containing sewage contaminants. Deionized water is purifying water that has had charged ions removed. It is used for various applications within healthcare, including the laboratory. Gray water is water, as from a sink or bath, that does not contain serious contaminants, as from toilets or diapers. Potable water is water suitable for drinking. Reverse osmosis water is water that has been forced through a special membrane under pressure, producing highly purifying water, which typically requires remineralizing with essential trace elements before use. It is used for various applications in healthcare, including dialysis. Water-related outbreaks have been documented as arising from a variety of sources, including splashes from sink drains containing contaminated biofilms, aerosols from showerheads, contaminated potable, tap, water used with patient care equipment or directly with patients. The quality of drinking water depends in part on preventive maintenance and surveillance for HAIs, including a high index of suspicion for infectious agents associated with moisture or water distribution systems. It also depends on the quality of the water supplied and the treatment methods used by the municipality. Key point: though a major component of water quality is outside of facility control, IPs should still understand the basic design of water supply and waste management systems so that they can provide useful input on plumbing system designs and understand potential factors that may contribute to suspected waterborne infections. Factors outside of the facility control that may influence the number of HAIs related to a facility's water supply include municipal water treatment methods, use of chloramines rather than chlorine to reduce the risk of Legionella in the distribution systems of municipal water supplies. Multiple reports support the reduced risk of hospital-associated Legionnaires' disease when municipal water treatment plants use monochloramine. Water hardness and sediment. Malfunction of valves, filters, or other equipment due to minerals and sediments remaining in the water after treatment processes. Unplanned disruptions outside of the facility. Heating or chlorination, flushing, and water testing before resumption of affected water distribution lines due to water main breaks or flooding. CDC guidelines offer specific guidance on remediation strategies for the water distribution system, including conditions involving a boiled water advisory, BWA. The quality of water in a healthcare facility's distribution system can be determined by testing the water. While routine testing is not usually necessary, sampling during outbreak investigations can help determine needed infection control measures. Samples should be assayed by a laboratory that uses established methods and quality assurance protocols. Water management plans. Recent guidance from the Joint Commission and the CDC recommends that healthcare facilities develop a facility water management plan to prevent water-associated diseases, including Legionella. Some facilities with complex plumbing systems may include several water management plans. A team or individual should oversee development, management, and maintenance activities. Below are the components of a water management plan. Establish a water management program team to implement the plan. Describe the building's water systems, including a diagram of water supply sources, treatment systems, processing steps, control measures, and end use points. Identify external hazards, that is, compromised supply, and describe plans for mitigating or managing events. Identify areas where biofilms may be present and areas where opportunistic pathogens may grow and spread. Conduct an infection control risk assessment, ICRA, and adapt for potential water exposures both direct and indirect. Identify control point locations and determine how control measures will be applied using both the environmental assessment and the ICRA, and decide how to monitor control measures. Set control limits for measures that will be monitored: water temperature, residual disinfectant, HPC, heterotrophic plate counts, and slash or total organic carbon, and take corrective action. Outbreak and contingency response plans are a part of a water management plan. Plans should be verified via validation, documentation, and communication. Monitoring for environmental pathogens. Water distribution systems have been the source of Legionella outbreaks in both acute and chronic care facilities. As such, much of the focus on monitoring and controlling for water-associated pathogens is on Legionella. Other bacterial and fungal contamination risks associated with water include Pseudomonas, Acinetobacter, Moraxella, Aeromonas, Xanthomonas, Aspergillus, Fusarium spp. Atypical, nontuberculosis, Mycobacteria. All of these genera are associated with serious disease and can potentially be transmitted directly or indirectly from faucets and sinks or through inhalation of aerosols, such as those generated from construction activities or showerheads. However, based on limited quantifiable data, the risk of healthcare-associated transmission of these pathogens from water is considered relatively low. Environmental sources of water-associated pathogens. Important reservoirs for water-associated pathogens include potable water systems and cooling towers, flush sinks, faucet aerators, hoppers and toilets, eyewash/drench shower stations, ice chest/machines, water baths used to thaw or warm blood products and other liquids, and whirlpool or spa-like baths. Facilities providing hemodialysis require more expensive, dedicated water treatment and delivery systems. Specific issues and pathogens associated with these reservoirs, along with design and IPC strategies, as applicable, for them, are discussed below. Potable water systems, cooling towers, surfaces. Sources of aerosolized water, especially cooling towers, can promote the growth and dispersion of Legionella. Once Legionella is introduced into a facility's potable water system, organisms may proliferate in heated water reservoirs, spread throughout the water distribution system, that is, pipes, and ultimately contaminate sink faucets and shower heads. Excessive moisture around pipes and insulation, condensation in drain pans, and flooding from broken pipes can lead to extensive environmental fungal contamination. Other moisture-prone surfaces that can cause problems include air handling units and ventilation ducts. Static, stagnant water systems can serve as reservoirs of organisms in the healthcare environment by supporting bacterial growth. When water is not moving in recirculation loops, it becomes stagnant and the residual chlorine or other water treatments can dissipate and lose antimicrobial activity. This in turn leads to corrosion, scale and sediment, and development of biofilm that further amplifies the growth of microorganisms, particularly Legionella. Stagnation may result from poor design, dead legs or capped pipes left in place when an older system is renovated, or from a power loss causing pump failure with resultant loss of water flow. Water in such systems can cause direct or indirect spread of microorganisms to patients. Hospital potable water must have less than 1 coliform colonies per 100 ml of water. Key point: note that contamination of the potable water system can lead to infections indirectly through equipment, even if the equipment does not use or store water, if that equipment is rinsed in tap water. For example, medication nebulizers rinsed in tap water have been suspected as the source of an outbreak of Legionellosis in a community hospital. There have also been numerous outbreaks related to endoscopes and automated endoscope reprocessors, AR, related to the ability of gram-negative bacteria to multiply to substantial concentrations under the right conditions. These bacteria then spread to equipment via rinsing with tap water. General guidelines for the design of the potable water supply system include: sufficient water supply pressure to operate all fixtures and equipment during maximum demand. Provision of 2 separate water lines from a looped municipal water supply system to a facility would minimize interruption of water service. Water service mains, branch mains, and other main water lines with stop, isolation, valves for each fixture to isolate a portion of the water system when repair is required. Vacuum breakers on faucets and approved backflow preventers, that is, anti-siphon devices, to protect contamination in high-risk areas such as dialysis units. Avoiding floor drains as much as possible. Not installing drainage piping in ceilings or having it be exposed in sensitive areas. If overhead piping is unavoidable, the space below must be protected from leaks, condensation, and dust particles. Avoiding or minimizing water supply pipes with dead ends. Maintaining appropriate hot water temperatures to meet the demands of patient care. The overlap between water temperatures supporting the growth of Legionella, 25 to 42.2 degrees Celsius, 77 to 108 degrees Fahrenheit, and the high end of comfortable temperatures for warm water, generally above 40.5 degrees Celsius, 105 degrees Fahrenheit, and below 48.8 degrees Celsius, 120 degrees Fahrenheit, along with the interplay of local building codes and regulations, means that temperature specifications are important safety and cost-benefit decision points for facilities. If using a higher temperature water supply in the building, mixing pressure valves may be necessary to eliminate the risk of scalding. Cooling towers designed to direct tower drift away from air intake systems or use of drift eliminators. EPA-approved biocides should be used regularly for operational cooling towers. Preventive maintenance for potable water systems includes a number of issues. Example, cleaning and disinfection of cooling towers. Biocides should be applied at label dosages to control the growth of bacteria, algae, and protozoa. Removal or prevention of sediment accumulation may reduce other niches that can amplify microbial growth, and plumbing that includes self-draining shower lines, anti-scald valves, and pipe insulation may also reduce contamination risks. Key point: the use of appropriate water temperatures is among the most critical prevention methods available to the IP. ASHRAE recommends that cold water be stored below 20 degrees Celsius, 68 degrees Fahrenheit, and hot water above 60 degrees Celsius, 140 degrees Fahrenheit, circulating with a minimum return temperature of 51 degrees Celsius, 124 degrees Fahrenheit, or the highest allowable temperature specified in state regulations and building codes. Note that there is a difference between storage temperatures and the temperature provided at the tap, which, as discussed above, must be kept at a level that prevents scalding. Decorative water fountains, water walls. As organizations recognize the importance of care delivery sites as therapeutic environments, they may consider installing open water features, such as decorative water fountains or water walls. Mounting evidence clearly shows that such features may aerosolize waterborne pathogens, thereby presenting an infection risk. Again, many of the observed outbreaks associated with these systems have taken the form of Legionella-associated infections. Not all of the fountains associated with outbreaks have had obvious aerosol-generating capability. Poor maintenance and underwater lighting, which may contribute to ideal water temperatures for Legionella, have been identified as contributing factors in some circumstances. However, other outbreaks have been associated with the water filtration, ozone generation, and lack of routine maintenance of these fountains. In these cases, poor fountain design, leading to water stagnation, may have been to blame. As such, decorative water fountains or water walls should be systematically disinfected and subject to routine preventive maintenance. Sinks, flushing rim sinks, hoppers, and toilets. Sinks and related fixtures may pose health risks because contamination of sink drains and faucet aerators is expected. The following factors and concerns related to these fixtures have been observed in healthcare settings. Enhanced growth of waterborne organisms on sink faucet aerators. Reservoirs of microorganisms in poorly maintained sink traps. Contaminated water splashes due to poor sink design. Aerosols from toilets, though not directly linked to disease transmission. Pathogenic organisms, such as P. aeruginosa and Acinetobacter in water baths and related devices used to warm blood or blood products and other liquids. Identified outbreaks and case reports associated with these reservoirs. Sink design that leads to water backsplashing is one of the most concerning sources of infection associated with these fixtures. Water may splash from a sink to a surrounding surface as far as 1 meter away. Policies for routine cleaning, disinfection, and changing of the water should be in place for water baths and fluid warming devices. After cleaning, fill the bath or device with germicide added water. Follow manufacturer recommendations. Example, perform leak tests. Wrap blood products in impermeable plastic to keep them dry and free of contamination. Key point, though certain risks may not be entirely mitigated in all cases, proper sinks or fixture designed together with preventive maintenance can help reduce infection concerns, or eliminate them completely, in some cases. Systematic cleaning routines should be established. Example, for aerator use. Avoiding the use of tap water for cleaning equipment and procedures and replacing faulty fixtures may also address observed issues. Where applicable, follow and incorporate manufacturer's recommendations and instructions into policies surrounding maintenance, cleaning, and other related preventive strategies. Eye-washing stations. Eye-washing slash shower stations may go unused for months and pose a possibility of contamination. Water-associated microorganisms, example, Acanthamoeba, have been reported to contaminate these stations. Pseudomonas, Legionella spp. Amoebae, and fungi have also been detected in eyewash stations. Cleaning and disinfection methods should follow current recommendations, including American National Standards Institute, ANSI, recommendations for flushing the system for a 3-minute period each week. Refrigerators and freezers. Refrigerators and freezers must be properly used and maintained for infection control. Inadequate refrigeration of foods may permit the growth of microbes, resulting in a greater likelihood of foodborne illness. Inadequate refrigeration of medications, biologics, vaccines, blood, and blood products may alter their potency and slash or chemical composition or allow proliferation of microbial contaminants. Additionally, conditions for mold growth can be created in condensate pans in refrigerators and slash or freezers used to store food, pharmaceuticals, and blood products. When selecting slash purchasing equipment for cooling or freezing, compare features that best meet the intended use, including operating range. Example, an automatic defrost cycle can damage temperature-sensitive items, size, location of use, cleanable surfaces, durability, and maintenance needs. The following list provides best practices regarding use and maintenance of refrigerators and freezers. Provide accurate temperature monitoring for refrigerators and freezers. An alarm system may be required, example, for a blood bank refrigerator, or desired. Establish a method to regularly record temperature. Example, visualize and document daily or observe an automated recording chart each shift. Include action to take if the reading is not in the acceptable range. Schedule routine monitoring and testing of refrigerator and freezer alarms where applicable. Test accuracy of thermometers. Calibration may be required. Example, blood bank, tissue freezer, by using standard regulations and slash or recommendations. Schedule and perform regular preventive maintenance of all freezers and refrigerators. Include air vents, gaskets, cooling coils, and fans. Maintain adequate building dehumidification to prevent condensation and mold proliferation in walk-in refrigeration. Provide training for personnel in recognizing and implementing safe maintenance of refrigerators to include appropriate cleaning methods. Ice machines. Contaminated ice and ice machines have been implicated as sources of infection. While reports are not common, true and pseudo-outbreaks from atypical mycobacteria contamination, example, M. gordonei, have been linked to ice machines as have cryptosporidiosis and Legionella spp. Maintenance tasks for ice machines include weekly or monthly tasks and other monthly or quarterly tasks. CDC guidelines exist, but manufacturers' instructions should be followed and disinfectants approved as suitable for the equipment by the EPA or other regulatory agency should be used as a general first step. Weekly slash monthly tasks. Clean storage chests according to a set weekly to monthly schedule. Ice making machines also require cleaning, though on a less frequent basis. Disconnect and empty the unit, allow unit to warm to room temperature, and scrub all surfaces, including door tracks, guides, and gaskets, with clean materials and fresh soap or detergent solution. Rinse all surfaces with fresh tap water, wipe dry with clean materials, rinse again with a 10 to 100 ppm chlorine solution, 1 to 8 ml of sodium hypochlorite, household bleach, per gallon of water, and allow to dry. Monthly slash quarterly tasks. Disconnect ice-making machine on a regular schedule, discard all ice, and disassemble removable parts of the machine that come in contact with the water used to make ice. Thoroughly clean the machine and its parts with detergent and water. Check for the need of possible repair of any portion of the machine, replacing feeder lines as needed. Ensure the presence of an airspace in the tubing that leads from the potable water and let into the water distribution system of the ice-making machine. Inspect for insect or rodent infestation under the unit and treat if necessary. Check the gasket around the door of the ice storage chest. Open compartment models for cleanliness and evidence of possible leakage or dripping of contaminants into the chest. Clean the chest as described with detergent and water. Circulate a 50 to 100 ppm chlorine solution throughout the entire storage and ice making system according to the manufacturer's recommended cleaning and sanitizing procedures. Let the 50 ppm chlorine solution remain in the ice-making and storage system of the machine for 4 hours, or at least 2 hours for a 100 ppm chlorine solution. Remove the chlorine solution, flush the system with fresh tap water, allow the ice storage chest to dry, and then return the unit to service. Interruption or outage of the potable water supply increases the risk of line or ice maker contamination once water is restored. For an anticipated or unplanned outage, include a plan to shut off the equipment. Example, turn off the water supply and ensure a safe return to service once the supply is restored. Patient care equipment. Equipment that is rinsed in tap water can be a source of infection. For example, medication nebulizers rinsed in tap water were suspected as the source of an outbreak of legionellosis in a community hospital. Constant vigilance of respiratory therapy equipment. Example, humidifiers, nebulizers, bronchoscopes, and other patient care equipment involving water and moisture is required. Gram-negative organisms can multiply to substantial concentrations under the right conditions. Sterile water should be used for rinsing semi-critical equipment and devices used in the respiratory tract after they have been chemically disinfected. Steam supply systems. Steam supply systems should be monitored to mitigate any contamination or spread of infection. Inadequate functioning of steam sterilizers causes insufficient sterilization of medical instruments and devices. Faulty humidification systems can result in spraying of condensate or steam on filters, which compromises filtration efficacy. Leaking from steam debris due to faulty pressure relief creates ideal conditions for mold growth. Steam spraying on filters or other malfunctions can also result in mold growth. The pressure of supplied steam should be monitored. Any needed corrective action, example, valving correction, should follow established remediation protocols. Labeled steam lines and training about potential burn hazards ensure that staff works with steam safely. Steam outages should be reported to affected departments, central services, sterile processing, or etc. Whirlpool or spa-like baths. Microbial contamination of pools, whirlpools, hot tubs, and physiotherapy tanks may involve the drains and agitators and result in cross-contamination between patients if there is inadequate cleaning and disinfection of the plumbing and drains. Among other pathogens, P. aeruginosa has been associated with hot tubs and whirlpools. Plumbing for spa baths or spa-like tubs has longer piping than that for typical whirlpools. Thus, contaminated water may become trapped after apparent draining. It can then be flushed into the tub during the next use. Drain designs that seal at the top of the openings can help eliminate potential sources of infection. The cleaning and disinfection of the tub and jets, using specific spa cleaning products, as well as following proper draining and flushing sequences are essential things to consider in the use of these tubs. If piped spa-style tubs are used, the tub and jets should be cleaned and disinfected with specific spa cleaning products, and proper draining and flushing sequences should be used. Equipment may be stainless steel, plexiglass, or tile, but it remains critical to consult with manufacturers to identify appropriate cleaning products. Hemodialysis. The purity of water used for hemodialysis, reuse, or concentrate preparation is critical. Water used for dialysis should be sampled monthly, and bacteria must be less than 200/mL. Dialysate should be also cultured, and similar levels of bacteria must be maintained. Most hemodialysis centers have water treatment systems that consist of a water softener, carbon and particulate filters, reverse osmosis and / or deionizers, and filters and ultrafilters with or without UV light. Systems should be designed to remove the anticipated chemical and biological impurities found in potable water where they are installed. The design of water distribution systems for hemodialysis should follow these general principles. Plastic piping to prevent contamination of treated water with elements such as copper, lead, or zinc from metal pipes. Continuous loop system with no dead ends or unused branches to prevent bacterial contamination in such stagnant areas. Constant flow of water through all distribution piping with a minimum flow velocity of 1.5 feet per second, feet/sec, at the distal end of a direct system at peak demand and 3 feet/sec in the distal portion of the loop in an indirect feed system. Minimum number of elbows and T-joints. Outlets at the highest point of the system to provide adequate germicide contact of all parts of the distribution system during disinfection. Avoidance of use of storage tanks due to their increased water amount and surface available for bacterial contamination. If a storage tank is used, it should be the smallest tank possible, designed to have a constant flow with no stagnant areas. It should have a conical or bowl-shaped base, drain from the bottom, use an airtight lid, and be able to be cleaned, disinfected, and rinsed. All storage tanks should be vented through a hydrophobic 0.2 micron air filter. An ultrafilter or some other form of bacterial control device should be installed distal to the storage tank. All piping, including water lines between the water outlet and the back of the dialysis machines, and storage tanks must be disinfected at intervals adequate to prevent bacterial growth. Disinfection must be done at least monthly, but more frequent disinfection may be necessary to maintain viable bacteria and endotoxin levels below OMI standards. Frequency is dependent on the quality of the water entering the system and the individual system design. Disinfection schedules should be designed to prevent bacterial growth rather than eliminate it when bacterial contamination over the limit is detected. EPA-approved chemicals should be used according to IFU and must be thoroughly rinsed from the system with treated water before the system is used. Clear separation of clean and dirty areas must be established in order to avoid cross-contamination. Employees must wear appropriate PPE when cleaning and disinfecting hemodialysis machines to avoid exposure to bloodborne pathogens. Design issues for disposal of human waste. There is no safe, aesthetic management of stool and other human waste in bedpans. System design should provide for emptying bedpans without leaving the patient's room or for minimal travel distance to clinical/flushing rim sinks and treatment areas. Controlling Legionella. As referenced up to this point, one of the major concerns for potable water contamination in healthcare facilities is the prevention of Legionella, particularly following water disruptions. The prevention of healthcare-associated Legionnaires' disease depends upon identifying possible water-related sources where Legionella growth could occur and instituting control measures. Risk assessment evaluation has proved useful in predicting Legionella SPP contamination in water systems. Legionella testing is not required in most areas or jurisdictions if not associated with clinical disease. However, testing may be recommended when there is evidence of clinical disease or as part of a Legionella prevention plan. Note that the mere presence of Legionella organisms in a water system does not predict the occurrence of disease outcomes. Sampling programs with more than 30% positivity rates have been associated with clinical disease. The CDC recommends testing for routine and non-routine purposes to establish a baseline measurement for performance indicators, validate water management plans, evaluate potential growth and transmission sources, and test remedial treatment efforts. Routine testing may benefit facilities that house or treat individuals at increased risk for Legionnaires' disease, have a history of associated Legionnaires' disease cases, and/or are unable to meet control limits consistently. Test methods vary by type of water system and reason for testing. A plan must be in place to remove Legionella from the water system. Key point: resource-sharing control strategies for Legionellosis are provided by multiple different organizations, including OSHA, ASHRAE, and the CDC. The CDC's guidelines provide a series of steps that should be undertaken whenever either a single case of laboratory-confirmed nosocomial Legionnaires' disease is identified or two or more cases of laboratory-confirmed disease, which might be healthcare-associated, occur within 6 months of each other. Remediation strategies. Planning hazard prevention through system and equipment design as well as preventive maintenance remains the strongest approach. However, given the best of intentions, disruptions do occur, whether during construction, natural disasters, or technical or human-made disasters. We'll look at two types of disruptions: utility disruption and leaks and floods. Utility disruption. Emergency preparedness requires a number of strategies, including sufficient storage of supplies and follow-up response protocols for planned or unplanned power loss affecting water flow. IPs should participate in planning and response to prevent, detect, and/or reduce infectious hazards in accordance with TJC utility and emergency management standards. Facility policies should include contingency planning for supplying water for drinking, cleaning, bathing, and toilet flushing. In addition, an unplanned disruption may affect the water distribution lines and require heating or chlorination, flushing, and water testing before resumption of use. CDC guidelines offer specific guidance on remediation strategies for the water distribution system, including conditions involving a boiled water advisory, BWA, IPs should be aware of and have access to their facility's water quality analysis report, which must be provided to local water control authorities. The report includes elements measured against standards such as turbidity, 1 unit, microbiologic contaminants, 0 coliform bacterium, 100 ml, and residual disinfectant levels, such as chlorine, less than 4 mg/L chlorine. The preferred method of decontaminating the hot water system after a disruption must be identified in contingency plans. Any separate water storage and treatment system for dialysis should be included in the plan, including filter changes and disinfection. Leaks and floods. Water seepage and retained moisture may lead to serious bacterial and fungal contamination in air handling systems. Practical suggestions for cleanup and treatment of wet surfaces, whether ceilings, walls, or flooring, are available. Cleanup protocols affecting various surfaces and furnishings should be followed. Clean and disinfect hard surfaces after the area is drained. Remove carpeting, loose tiles, and buckled flooring to allow the support surface to dry before replacing the items. Wet carpeting with a low-level disinfectant or sanitizer before removing it to minimize dust dispersion. Remove and replace wallboard and other porous surfaces if they cannot be cleaned and dried within 72 hours. Moisture meter readings should be less than 20% moisture content. Clean and allow hard surface furniture to dry. Dry, sand, and revarnish wood furniture. Replace cloth furniture. Replace electrical equipment that cannot be dismantled, cleaned, and reassembled. The key to preventing infection problems consists of removal of the moisture source, cleanup within 24 to 48 hours, disinfecting with diluted bleach solutions, and thorough drying.